Becoming a full-time writer can be overwhelming. Join Jay Thorne and Zach Bohannon as they help you improve your craft and find your audience so you too can become a career author. This is the Career Author Podcast.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Career Author Podcast. I'm Zach Bohannon, and sitting across from me in this glorious New Orleans hotel room is Jay Thorne. What's up, dude?
Yo, what's up, man?
I feel like I haven't seen you all week.
I know.
It's been weird.
Just catching up after not being apart.
So we are recording from our hotel room in New Orleans, where we are hosting Authors on Train 2018. So it's been a awesome, even though it's been a cold week, which is weird for New Orleans. It's been quite a quite an awesome week. So I'm having a pretty good time so far. What about you?
Yeah, it's been great. Having a lot of fun with our attendees. And it's always fun to be in the city, too.
Absolutely. So this isn't going to be a normal episode this week. We actually, at the end of the first day of our retreat here, we recorded basically an AMA and ask us, or an AUA, I guess it'd be, and ask us anything session with our attendees. They had some really good questions for us, and it turned into some really good discussion. And we decided to record that and make that the show this week. So that's going to be it. So after we get out of the little intro here, then we will just cut over to that, and it should be a lot of fun. So, but first, before we do that, we just want to remind you that the Career Author Podcast is brought to you by all our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/thecareerauthor. And for as little as a dollar a month, you too can become a patron and help support the show and gain access to our monthly bonus episodes, such as our Amazon product page makeover, where we look at one of our patrons' Amazon pages every month and just kind of look at the marketability of their book. And also our movie analysis, where we look at the plot and story and characters and everything, and kind of break down movies from a storytelling perspective. And this month, that movie is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So if you are one of our patrons, or if you're planning on becoming one, you should watch that movie before we get that episode out, so that you can kind of play along with us. And in saying all that, we want to take a moment to thank our newest patron, Jack Schaefer. So thank you very much, Jack, for joining. And again, if you want to join, if you want to check out the stuff we're doing, you can check out patreon.com/thecareerauthor. So I guess that about does it for our intro, huh?
Yeah, just a couple other quick things. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles will be out a week from today, the day you're listening to this episode. We publish it on Thanksgiving Day, in case you want to be in the mood. So if you want to take a look at it early, it will be available early. And a little teaser, next week, our episode will also be recorded here in New Orleans. It'll be one of our regular episodes, but we will be together, which we always find to be a really good time when we're podcasting.
Sure.
So little heads up about that. That'll be coming next week. And I just wanted to give a personal shout out and thank you to the folks who are asking us questions and spending the week with us. So thanks to Christopher, Ryan, Takiri, Lori, Chloe, and Cameron.
Absolutely.
I think I got them all. So
nailed it.
Yeah. Those authors who have platforms, make sure you hit their links. We'll put those in the show notes. Go buy their books. Support them. It's a great community that we're part of, and we're honored to serve it.
Absolutely. So it's been an awesome week so far, and hopefully only going to get better. So with that, this is the Ask Us Anything we did with that group. So thank you.
Later.
Later.
Well, I have a question.
Go for it.
It's the same question I keep asking, which is the launch strategy for each book in a series, or book two, book three specifically.
Zach, do you want to maybe sort of give an overview of launch strategy as you see it, and then maybe the difference between a book one and a book three launch or book two launch?
Yeah, I mean, so like we personally put pretty much majority of our efforts into book one. And that's where we spend our most ads. That's where we'll, you know, hit up friends in our genre to email their list. Because what we figure is if we build up an audience for book one, and you know, you got to have your calls to action stuff in your book one, so you can try to get people on a list, and then so you can tell them about the next book. You know, everyone's going to, assuming you're writing a linear series where people have to start on book one, then you, that's, people are going to have to start there anyway. So like, that's where we would put most of our efforts in. And then for books two and three at that point, like, you know, we don't really run ads like Amazon ads in books two and three. I know there's a lot of people that say to do that, and we have talked about it. We just haven't been doing it. But we're constantly pushing towards book one, like always run ads on book one. That's where we're trying to funnel most of our traffic into. When books like two, three, four, whatever come out, we're basically just hitting that list that we've built and letting them know the next book is out. Now, as far as like, some, you know, sometimes when like book, we generally don't do it on book two, but like if the third book comes out or something and it's been a while since book one's come out, we'll like discount book one down to 99. Now, we don't do free, being because our stuff is mostly exclusive to Amazon. And
but what's the problem with doing free?
With free is the fact that you can really mess up the algorithm with Amazon, because so many people will just will download a free book even if they like don't care about it. 99 cents, you get a little bit of that, but not as much, because people at that point at least have to pull their wallets out. But we feel that doing 99 cents is a way that you can reinvigorate a series and bring more people in, as opposed to you know, just doing it free and then messing up all your algorithm stuff with it. And kind of get to you earlier, like way later when your numbers have really gone down, I think free can work because it won't affect you as bad. But like when you're still releasing books in that series and still your book one is still ranked pretty decent, doing pretty well, like I wouldn't mess with that too much. So
would you then run an ad on the 99 cent book when the third book comes out?
It depends how, so here's something else to think about. Like, because there's some websites that will let you run ads on new books. And a lot of times we will launch book one at 99 cents, and we'll do like e-reader news today or some other sites like that. You have to remember, like, you really are only going to get so much traction out of those sites, and you're only going to be able to do them so many times with the same series. So I think that would depend on how long it's been between book one and three, because you might want, if you're going to do a 6-book series, you might want to wait and hit e-reader news today when you have even more books out again. Does that make sense? Because you're only going to be able to go on that well so many times before you get depleted results.
Well, Facebook ads or Amazon ads?
Like, we're constantly running Amazon ads. So, despite no matter what the sale is or whatever, we personally don't do Facebook ads very much anymore. And we're not running any.
We're not running any right now. And we talked about doing some Facebook ads coming up. But the problem with Facebook ads versus Amazon ads is that Facebook is the modern equivalent of a newspaper. So people flip through Facebook, but they're not going to Facebook to look for something. So it doesn't mean you can't have success with Facebook ads, but you're competing not with other authors or other books, but with the world. Everything else is what you're competing with. Whereas Amazon ads, Amazon is showing an ad for a book to a reader who's holding the device that they can purchase the book from. So that's the difference.
The most success we've personally had with paid Facebook stuff is not through running our own individual ads. It's been through like friends of ours who have a big following on there, like telling their people on their page about our books, and we would pay for that. But even that now, because Facebook is showing less of that, it doesn't work as like some of our couple of friends who are really into it and we're really using that, they won't even like, they're like, dude, it's not even worth me putting your book up anymore, even if you pay for
and
it.
And they were paying for boosted posts. They weren't even necessarily targeted ads. So even boosting to the audience who clicked like on that author page still wasn't getting the response it used to.
But we had way more luck with our friends boosting posts and doing like saying it to friends and people who like, you know, people who like our page and their friends. We had way more success than with fiction than we ever did with Facebook ads. Again, we know people have made that work, but we personally have not. So does that kind of answer your question,
it does,
or do
you
have a follow-up or anything on that?
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, cool.
I have a question. I asked it earlier this morning as well, but the best ways to get people on your reader list or on your mailing list, so there's organic and then there's paid, but do you have any, like, what kind of organic options are there other than giving a lead magnet? How do you get these people? For me, that's the biggest question, is how do you get that traffic and how do you get them into your list? I know what to do once they're in my list. I have a nice...
But getting them
there.
Or
getting them there is
that
a question.
Is
That is the million-dollar question. It is what we're struggling with. It's what a lot of authors are struggling with, and we're gonna be revealing some things on the podcast in a few weeks. But some specifics of what we're doing. I think I'm a bit cynical now on list building strategies that are anything but organic or authentic content marketing. A few years ago, I was participating in it wasn't a list swap, but like these giveaways.
Dog,
nice. There were these giveaways that you would pay to be part of, and then the person running the giveaway would collect all the email addresses and then distribute them to the authors who participated. Now, it was perfectly ethical and legal. I'm not saying it wasn't, but what happened was the quality of the subscriber that came from those was far less than the organic ones. And when I say far less, I mean like unsubscribing the next day, never opening emails, because they were really in it for the giveaway.
Marking you spam.
Yeah, marking you as spam, reporting you as spam. So at this point in time, in 2018, I'm not interested in any sort of giveaway, swaps, list building, pay for services. I know there are some out there that work, and I added a few of those promos. I added 700, 800, 900 subscribers at a time. But out of the 700, 800, 900, you know, I would get like 5% that would engage. So I don't have the really single succinct answer as to how you get the traffic there. What I can tell you is that the people who do get to you organically are the ones you want to be after anyways. And as a little addition to that, I think there's sort of Seth Godin was on Tim Ferriss's podcast recently, and he was talking about smallest viable audience. And even like, I think it's shifting a little bit. I think now, like it used to be, we all wanted to have the biggest list. Like the one who dies with the biggest list wins, right? And I think now authors are backing away from that and realizing it's not about the biggest list. It's about getting the smallest number of people who are really into what you're doing. And so you're less concerned about the size of the list versus the type of people you're getting on it. So like what we're doing now is we're trying to go super niche. That's the reader we want. We don't want mainstream readers. We don't want people who read 10 different genres. I mean, if they do, great, but that's not who we're going after. We want to go after the people who read every single post-apocalyptic dystopian book that comes out, and that's, they live and breathe it. They watch the movies. They want to talk about it. Those are the people we're going after. So the general answer to your question is, where are those readers now for you? And that's where you need to go. So it takes time. You know, like one example might be, let's say you're writing a weight loss book. So maybe you're part of Facebook groups, support groups for people who are trying to lose weight or trying to get healthy. And you become part of that community. And that's where it starts. And that's where you start to, you contribute and contribute and contribute. And then when it feels right, you say, oh, hey, by the way, if you guys, you know, if you need some help, I've got this like meal planning chart. I'd be happy to give it to you. Just, you know, go here and put in your email address and it'll come to you. Perfectly legit, ethical. And that's how you do it. I think that takes time though. It takes patience, because that's not the type of thing that you could just
purchase. Yeah, I think that's the key, is you're not going to be able to build anything overnight, you know, and I know you're not suggesting that, but
yeah.
I think a lot of people think that way. You know, they just want to get as many people on the list as possible. You know, they'll do, like we've been asked a lot, like, hey, I'm running this big promo for like all science fiction books. It's like, I don't care. Like, because then it's, I don't want to send our post-apoc books to people who like space opera and cyberpunk and lit RPG or whatever. Like, because those, like, we want to go to our niche. We know what our niche is, and that's the people we're trying to reach. Because we know those are the people who are more likely to engage and want to buy more of our stuff. So,
yeah.
So mostly go to Facebook groups, perhaps? And maybe even do targeted advertising on Facebook or AMS?
Well, I mean, if you're looking for the people, you need to be part of that.
Yeah.
You need to be one of them, right? So Facebook groups is one example. I know there's a resurgence of sort of small niche bulletin boards and groups. You know, there are in real world gatherings, you know, like again, using the weight loss example, like maybe you're part of a, there's a local group that meets every Thursday and talks about weight loss issues and swaps recipes. Like,
I think his point was more to be where your audience is. So like, your audience might not be on Facebook, but he was using that as an example that there might be a lot of weight loss groups on there and stuff, and that'd be a good place to be. So
yeah, Instagram is another place where I think it's very genre specific and very theme based. Like,
same thing with Pinterest.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of different genres.
Yeah, so you kind of have to see where they are and then become involved in that. But as a little tease, we are gonna talk about some very specific things we're gonna do that might work for you too.
Yeah.
Can you talk about how you approach a series, in as far as, do you plot out all of the books and the series arc? Is there a series arc, and do you plan out reader magnets? And
that's evolving a little bit. I think that's a good thing for you to talk about, though, because we're
kind
of in the middle of that right now.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing. It's a and what I mean by tricky is that we're in the planning stages of two different series, but one of them is our flagship. So again, we're big fans of Chris Fox and. We love what he does, and his idea that if you want to be a career author, you need a flagship series. You need to be have that one that anchors everything else you do. And we, up until this point, we have only been writing trilogies because, we know our why, we wanted to get as multiple sales funnels out there to kind of see where people were naturally going towards. So we have four trilogies out there, and now we kind of know, all right, based on those four, we see which one people are reading the most. That's our flagship that's going to go in that direction. However, it's tricky because do you want to plan and write a 12-book series and then find out that, like, it's not selling? Like, how far do you go before you cut your losses, right? So we have this tricky balance of, like, well, we've committed to writing and stacking the first three books. We're definitely going to do that. And so we're going to have a launch plan that's going to be a tight window. We don't know exactly what it's going to be yet, but books 1, 2, and 3 are going to come out pretty quickly. But we're also going to start book 4. So we're going to take a bit of a risk. We're going to assume that those first three books are going to do well, and we're going to be start working on book 4. That's about as far as we can comfortably go. That being said, we are going to be doing the 5 global commandments for every book for about, what do we say, 12 books?
12 books, yeah.
So we're gonna map out 12 books because we're planning for success. And we're ending book 12 in a way that will allow us to create another cycle of 12 because we're basing it on the hero's journey archetype. So I can even see up to 24 books out. I have a general sense of where the story could go, but, like, again, you know, publishing 3 books for editing, cover design, the marketing, like, it's an investment and it's a bit of a risk, but we feel pretty good about it. Mm-hmm. So it's I guess you have to find your own comfort level. I think I would probably not write a trilogy again necessarily without sort of an open loop at the end of 3 to continue, because the way we wrote and published our trilogies, those stories are kind of over. And it would be hard for us to tack on another 3 books to those. It would feel disingenuous.
I think one thing we've talked about, too, is writing this series in trilogies that all link together. But, like, every 3 books, like, we kind of wrap up some major stuff but leave some loops open.
Mm-hmm.
And so that we could, like, cut it off at any point, really, if we wanted to, if it needed to be.
Yeah.
So.
But, like, personally, I have to be careful because I love that. I love that process of, like, okay, I want to tell a 24 installment story. And I love figuring that out. So, but, like, we can't get that far ahead. So, looking at it in groups of 3s helps, and sort of being very practical about books 1, 2, and 3 and starting 4, but then, like, not going too far past that. So I would imagine, like, on a real practical level, we're probably going to purchase 4 book covers at once, but maybe not past that, you know.
I want us to commit to 6.
I think we probably can. I think we probably can. And honestly, like, a lot of the data now suggests that the read-through isn't going to get significant until you're into book 7, generally speaking. It doesn't mean you can't have success with less than that, but if you're going to write in a series, you almost have to have your eye on the horizon at, like, 9 or 10 or 12, and keep that in mind.
And I have a 7-book series that I've seen evidence of read-through, and But he really doesn't. He doesn't have anything that's really... You've mainly written trilogies, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Dust Falls at 4 and 5 is coming out, but yeah. Like that. But it hasn't been in the same rapid release system that we're absolutely. Doing, so it's kind of different.
Yeah, for sure.
Anything else?
I have a single book that is not part of a series. I have the story. It's a great story. Unfortunately, it's a bit like a woman's Decameron type story, and it's as I say, it's a one-off, and it's literary, slightly modern. What would you say about a launch plan for that? Because there isn't going to be a sequel to it.
I think you have two strikes against you right off the top.
Okay.
It's literary, and it's a standalone. And that's not a commentary on your writing or your choice of storytelling. It's just from the marketplace standpoint. It's really hard to sell standalone. It's really hard to sell literary fiction.
That's in the ebook market.
Mm. Yeah, especially in the ebook market. I don't know. Do you have thoughts on that?
I mean, I think you kind of need to know your why. Like, I mean, like, kind of what are your expectations with that book? Like, I mean, you know, if it's a story you really want to tell... Then, I mean, I say tell it, give it your best shot as far as a launch plan, but just have your expectations. Or, you know, I mean, maybe that's a situation too where maybe that particular book you try to sell it, you try to get an agent or something like that, you know? I mean, that's a possibility too, you know? So, I don't know. Like,
another possibility is that if it's part of the brand that you're building, you could try selling it. Okay, but it's still you, right? So you could try selling it and or self-publishing it, and if that doesn't work, it become a lead generator. It could be a reader magnet. It could be something you give away for some reason. Like I have books I've written that I've sort of squeezed the life out of, and they're dead, and I'm not going to go back to them, but I can repurpose those. So I think thinking about sort of repurposing that work. But I think Zach's point is a good one. Like if the whole reason you're doing this is because you just love this story and you just wanted to write it, then it almost doesn't matter how it launches. Okay. Other questions?
Comments? Discussion?
Well, I was just wondering, because you said you should look at a 12 book as opposed to a 7 book. You have a 7 book. Is 7 books, is that a good length for a series?
No, I'm sorry. What I meant was that the set, it's not until you hit 7 books in the series that there's data that shows significant read through. Not that you should end the series.
Because a lot of people wait until they see that many books out in a series and then they'll start reading it.
Mm-hmm. But what if it is just a 7 book series? Is that no, don't do that, do a longer series. I have a 7 book series that I'm planning.
I think if you're planning one, I would plan beyond 7. If you have one, that's different, but I think if you don't have it yet, I think multiples of 3, and there's a lot to that, like sort of, you know, spiritually and scientifically, like 3 is a good number. And I think if you can think of your storytelling components in groups of 3, then maybe 9 book is go from 7 to 9 on that.
Because you don't want to get, like, what if that series really takes off and you've got, you know, you people would buy more books.
Yeah, 7 is the tipping point, but it's also the last book in the series. You're leaving money on the table.
Yeah, which kind of happened to us with Final Awakening.
Yeah, we, yeah.
The series we showed with the Peeing Man on the cover that we talked about earlier. It's, you know, that series did really, the 3 books did really well, but we wrote it with the idea of 3 books, and we could have tried to do a 4th book, but it would have been cheating our readers.
Yeah, they would have known, like, it wasn't supposed to be that way.
Yeah, so
because I asked him at one point and he said no, and I was like, you're right. I'm like, we should just book 4
and we knew our why, and we wanted to do multiple entry points and stuff. Yeah. And have multiple series out. And but I think it's good we did it, because now we're going to have 4 trilogies out to kind of like help support us while we're going to go write this big series, which is, you know, we're going to write at least 3 books before we publish anything. So like we need that backlist to kind of help us out while we're not publishing anything for a few months. So,
and hopefully, like, according to the flagship principle, if we can write and publish and have success with this flagship, all of those back catalog titles are going to come up too, because, you know, we're no matter how fast we write, we're never going to keep up with the most voracious readers. So it'll give them something else to go back to that's also our flavor while they're waiting. So that's the plan anyways.
Yeah.
I have a similar question. Mm-hmm. I have a first three in a series that turned out, because they were my first books ever, they were a little literary because that's what I grew up with.
Yeah.
But they were also action-adventure, and everybody who writes reviews says that. But now I've discovered through Kaylytics and other data guy and all that, that Vigilante Justice is really big. Mm-hmm. And I love reading those, and my books are going towards those. And I thought, what's wrong with this idea? I wrapped the trilogy, the more literary trilogy right now, which I've already done, and then spin off those books into a Vigilante Justice with the same characters, bunch of kick-ass heroines around the world who beat bad guys, and, you know, like Lara Croft style. Mm-hmm. But then my question is, do I brand it the same as
the old see, that's book? A tough one, because I actually struggled with that. So my seven-book series was actually a six-book series, but I wrote a seventh book that took place like 30 years after and had some same characters. And I struggled with, should I make this its own thing? But like, it can be, I can tell people, hey, it's in my Empty Bodies world, whatever. Or do I make it book seven? And I talked to somebody who, my Robert Crane, who's a fantasy author, and he had done exactly what you're talking about. He tried to spin a series off, and the sales were just like, I mean, were not the same as his main series. So then he went back. And it was in a way where he could tie it in and make it like a book 10 or something, and then the sales on the book shot through the roof. So what I'm telling you is, if there's a way that you could make it like a book 4 and it still be tied in the same thing, that might work better for you than like trying to spin off and start a new thing. Does that make sense?
But yes. Is the gap too big between the reader?
That's the question, though. Yeah,
is it a different reader?
Yeah. Not really. But the thing is, the genre of the first three books are a little bit more to action adventure.
So you might not be able to necessarily make that work. Yeah.
And
for sure.
The new genre that I'm looking at, that Kaylytics, and I'm speaking with Alex, and he's saying, look, Vigilante Justice, my third book is really in that, because it just happened to be that way. The story lends it to
itself. Well, then maybe that would work. If book three, if your reader's getting through book three and there's that Vigilante Justice
already built
theme
in.
Already there, yeah. then I think then you could, the new one could be book 4.
If you've already got a readership in that series, it's a lot easier to keep them in that than to try to get them to go to something else. Even if in your mind, oh, well, this is the same thing, it's in the same world, like there's still a mental thing there with people where they think that they're starting something new instead of just continuing on. Does that make sense? In the same world. So it's kind of a tricky thing. But I know that, as I mentioned, Robert, who does really well, he had like some... I'll try to talk to him and maybe figure out. But he had some like real data on like what the difference was between like continuing a series and then trying to spin it off into a new series, the same world. And it was like a big difference. Yeah.
I guess my biggest question is, do I scrap the prequel I have? Because I am giving a couple of free books out, and that's more towards the literary, the first three series. So if somebody picks up this free book, my question is, are they going to read through to the fourth books? Or I need to think about this a little bit more in my head before I ask the question. But the lead magnet I give out is not Vigilante Justice. It's the beginning of the entire story, so it's more action-adventure.
Yeah, it depends. Yeah, I think we'll have to sit down with you and take a look at it, because I think it depends.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're about out of time.
Can I squeeze in one more question?
Yeah,
yes.
One.
So, following one character through the all 12 books, or each book is a different character?
No, same protagonist. Part of the flagship is that it's going to be someone the readers love and want to follow forever.
So a great example of the flagship is Harry Potter. Yep. Or a really good one is Dresden Files. Like, you know, that's a really, really good example.
Yeah.
Yeah.